This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma from the People Speak Radio Show. Wonderful having you with us tonight. I'm here with our board operator, Don Newsom, working in the background. Please feel free to join us on Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com. You can download and install the software. All you have to do from there is create a nickname, and you, too, can interact with our audience and with our guests. Or you can listen to us on our new network, BBS Radio, at bbsradio.com. Our guests tonight are probably middle of the half hour, Congressman Maxine Waters. We're waiting for her call now. Will be with us. And in our second half hour, Len and Libby Traubman of the Jewish Palestinian Living Room Dialogue Group of San Francisco are going to be guests with us this evening. There's a lot I could say about Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She's considered to be one of the most powerful congresspeople in the House today, and she's been reelected and she has gained a reputation as being a fearless and outspoken advocate for women, for children, people of color, and the poor. She was elected in November 2004 in her eighth term in the House of Representatives by an overwhelming 80% of the votes in the 35th District of California. Formerly the chair of the 39th member Congressional Black Caucus from the years 97 to 98, Representative Waters has held the influential leadership position of Chief Deputy Whip of the Democratic Party since the 106th Congress and was named co-chair of the powerful House Democratic Steering Committee. As I said, we're waiting to hear from the Congresswoman right now. And while we're waiting, I really would like everybody to meet our board operator and the owner and the host of BBS Radio, Don Newsom. Don, would you say hello to the folks for us, please? Don, are you with me?
I apologize for that. I just had to put something down.
Okay. Hi, Don.
How are you doing? Thank you.
I'm doing great. How are you? I just want to thank you, and I wanted everybody to see who was doing all the background noise.
Well, it's definitely me behind the scenes, I think, trying to keep it all together by the seat of my pants.
Don, can you tell us a little bit about BBS Radio?
Well, sure. You know, we started a couple of years ago, just about, in February, I think 27th, a couple of years ago, and it was really started to be a voice. I was quite upset and angered by the current political situation, by the environment, and by the manipulation, the deceit. And it got to such a point, even in my business life, and don't get me wrong, I mean, business was great. I just felt so wrong, and everything kept feeling twisted. And so, out of the blue, I just created a forum where people could be heard, a voice for truth, for people who are angry, upset, and they want to be heard, and that's why it started. Later it moved into radio because myself and then the others now that are aboard the team realize that if we're truly going to be a voice for truth and awareness and for empowering the people, we're going to need to move into all forms of media. That would include print, TV, radio, internet, everything. because we personally at BBS Radio truly feel that the mainstream media just is a racket, and we won't have any of it anymore.
Can you, Don, Mike, in the, our virtual auditorium is asking me to for you to talk about the TV studio. Tell me about it. I don't know anything about that.
Well, we're looking to gear up with live telecasts, TV broadcasts, and we'll be handling that through a Flash platform. Really, it's going to allow us to do more of a full, high-definition, full-screen video and audio out to the end listener, or end viewer, as it be. And I think it's going to just, again, bring about that conglomerate of media that we're trying to represent and be a voice for. Which
well,
is really
wonderful. How exciting for you, Ben. I didn't know anything about this. I guess I've been wrapped up with my own self.
That's the BBS LA TV. And folks, you'll want to really keep an eye on it. It should be open within about 30 days. We're going to have some big boys stepping in to do one-hour news programs earlier in the morning, live TV programs, and you'll recognize these names. And then we're going to continue to fill out the schedule with live TV-type programming.
Mm-hmm.
So stick around. It's really going to be fun.
Wow, that's wonderful, Don. Can you tell us who else is with you on board there? I know you're an affiliate with your brother and other people.
Well, right now we have a group of about five main people that oversee it, manage it, and then we have about four other people working for us full time and part time. So it's become a little team.
And for those of you that don't know, BBS Radio has some really fascinating radio shows. A lot of it is spiritually based, but all generally grassroots types of radio programs that are spreading a word of unity, spreading a word of harmony in the world. God only knows we need that these days. So I know that Mike, myself, Gary, Lindsay, Noel, Kevin, all of the people on Pal Talk are just really proud to be with this with this program, so it's a really great place. And for those of you that have never been to the BBS radio site, Mike, especially those in the virtual auditorium, you can either click on the link or go to www.bbsradio.com, and it's an amazing. And almost all of the shows are archived. You can hear older shows and live feed from tonight's show. It's really a great program and a great site. Congratulations, Don.
Well, Basma, thank you. It's really the people that are a part of it now. This thing, to me, is an energy. And it's a beautiful energy. And it's a creative one. And it's one full of, I think, love. And it's a force. And I think that has been a commodity or an energy, excuse me, that has been built by the hosts. The programming that is put on by our host, I think, is second to none. We have a caller. Should I put him on?
Yeah. Let's see. This is our guest.
You're on the air.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, is this Congresswoman Meg?
Yes, it is, Congresswoman Waters.
Hello, Congresswoman. How are you? This is Basma Farhat of the People Speak radio program. It's wonderful having you with us this evening.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It is our honor, Congresswoman. I know that your time is limited, and I've already done an intro on you for our listening audience and for our virtual auditorium. So they're all looking forward to hearing from you. And I guess we could get started right in the interview, if that's okay with you, Congresswoman.
Yes, that's okay.
I'm going to ask you, we're not even going to mince any bones here. First of all, my understanding of you is that you are a no-holds-barred kind of person. And so we're going to get right to the crux of what everybody is really, really interested in. The newly elected Democratic majority has been burdened with, from what I can see, Congresswoman, as a near impossible task of getting us out of Iraq. And I understand that you founded the Out of Iraq Caucus. Assuming we have the desire, do we really have the ability at this point to just get out of Iraq? And how is the Out of Iraq Caucus working towards that goal?
Thank you very much. The Out of Iraq Caucus was organized to mount pressure both inside our caucus and outside of our caucus to get us out of the war in Iraq. We wanted to do everything that we could to educate the members about what was going on, to keep it in the discussion, to make it a Democratic Party issue. And so we certainly did everything that we could prior to taking over the leadership of this Congress. In the 109th Congress, we certainly didn't have the majority, and so they were able to block us in any kind of legislative attempts. But now that we're in the majority, there are things that we could and should be doing that will help move us to the point of forcing this president, the commander-in-chief, to accept the reality that the American people do not want us there and that we should bring these soldiers home. The first thing that we should do is we should have something on the floor right away that opposes the surge, so-called surge, which is really an expansion. And even though people refer to that as symbolic, it's not holding any real legislative water. I think it would be very important for the people of this country to see that debate and that discussion and then have a vote on it. And I'm convinced that we will have the majority vote, which will, again, put pressure on the president and force him to have to move closer toward bringing our troops home. Secondly, the president has already let us know that he's going to come with a supplemental appropriation asking for $100 billion to continue his war in Iraq. I think that this is the real test for members of Congress who are against the war. The members have got to vote against any supplemental appropriation. There are members who are against the war but still are afraid of being considered unpatriotic if somehow they don't vote money for the soldiers, because they said the soldiers are there, they're at risk, and we have to have money for their armor and their ammunition and all of that. But we're trying to put together the information to show them that there's enough money in the pipeline for this war over the next 6 months or so, and so that they will not be putting anybody at risk. This money that's in the pipeline already should be used to wind out of Iraq so that there will be no need for a supplemental appropriation. So we've got work to do. The American public is speaking loud and clear, and all the polls are showing that people know this war has been mismanaged. They want out, and the public even supports not funding a supplemental appropriation. The public does not think that it is against the soldiers or not patriotic not to fund any more war. And so we've got to make sure that the members, gain the courage that they need, because that's the big test. Vote for the supplemental appropriation.
Well, Congresswoman, let me ask you something. In light of what you're telling me, and looking back at the day before yesterday when President George W. Bush was interviewed on 60 Minutes, his position was that he didn't care what the Congress voted. He didn't care what the American people wanted, according to the polls, and he didn't care that he has already made up his mind and that he was going to go full steam ahead with his proposal to send an additional 20,000 troops to Iraq and to request the additional funding for that. What does that say when a president on public national television tells us, I don't care what anybody thinks, I'm going to do it anyway?
Well, it shows that not only does the president disrespect what the American people are thinking and saying and would like to have done. But this president, I'm told, is more interested in writing his own history about this war and taking credit for winning. And taking credit for winning the war. And he does not want to go out of office with only, you know, a couple of years left, having said that he cut and run. He believes that if he puts more force in there, if he puts more troops in there, if he puts more money in there, he puts more ammunition in there, that somehow he can win it and take credit for saving us all from terrorism and from, you know, risk that has been mounted by Al-Qaeda, et cetera, et cetera. So this guy is, he's,
sounds,
you know, on a different kind of...
Sounds pretty narcissistic,
if you ask
me. Yes. I was saying it sounds pretty narcissistic, if you ask me.
Yeah, it, I think you're right. I mean, I think he's looking in the mirror and talking to himself. Because
he sure isn't talking Americans, that's
no,
for sure. Americans,
that's right.
Do not want this war.
No.
There is no doubt about it. Every
we may not be able to stop the surge with him sending more troops there, but we can stop this war by not voting for a supplemental appropriation.
Well, let me ask you, you are involved in many of the financial committees in the Congress, if I'm not mistaken. How do
no,
you see
I'm not involved
out?
In the financial committees of Congress, but I want to tell you that when this supplemental appropriation comes up, those committees that would be responsible for, you know, signing on or supporting or not supporting, they better do their job and they better do their work, because I think if it comes to the floor, if it's not stopped in committee to come to the floor, we can beat them.
Well, how are we going to hold everyone accountable for this? Congresswoman.
Well, you know,
I'm
on another line talking with organizers of the march for the 27th, big march and rally here in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the impact of that rally and the fact that they're going to have a lobby day. They're having workshops that they're putting together. They're going to fan out among these halls. They're going to let members know that they are holding them accountable, that they're watching them, that they expect them to help bring this war to an end. And I think in the final analysis is that public pressure that's going to whip members in line and this president in line and force the members to, no matter what they're thinking, not to give him any more money to expand this war. So public pressure is extremely important.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that was what concerned me the most. Obviously, the public pressure, the polls have absolutely and unequivocally said that we don't want this war, and our president on national television says, well, I'm not going to listen to the polls. Well, you're not listening to the people when you're not listening to the polls. It's as simple as that.
That's right.
And there's no bones. Now, tell us about the out of Iraq. Is it, now, the second part of the question was, can we realistically get out of Iraq?
We can. First of all, the Out of Iraq Caucus was organized to make sure that this issue is front and center, that we do not allow it to be swept under the rug, that we do not allow it to be nuanced to death, where people are saying, I'm against the war, but, or however, and we should do this without actually coming to, you know, the conclusion that we should get out. So we keep the fires burning, and we try and keep the pressure on, and we take out the special orders on the floor, and we engage on the subject, and we work with those members. For example, Lynn Woolsey is leading the way with a new bill that both Barbara Lee and I are major co-sponsors on, and we're going to introduce that bill tomorrow, and it's getting a lot of public attention, and it prescribes how we should get out of Iraq. There are other members who have got bills that have some kind of prescription for getting out of Iraq. So the Out of Iraq Caucus is there to stoke the fire and to keep the issue alive and to pressure our members and to keep public attention on. We have about... We're trying to get all of our new members familiar with the Out of Iraq Caucus. We have about 74 members We lost four members with this election, Mr. Owens, Mr. Evans, Ms. McKinney, and Sherrod Brown. But we picked up new members with Mr. Nadler, Mr. Rothman, and Mr. Clark Cohen, Ms. Clark Cohen Hare, and I think Ellison. So we keep going after our members, educating them, trying to expand the number of people who are interacting and who are involved in trying to bring the pressure about. And that's what we do. We support legislation. We have greater chance of success now because we have the majority numbers in our House. When we supported Mr. Murtha before, we were not in the majority. But now I think we can get some legislation passed.
Well, you know, we do have an audience question, if you'll be kind enough to indulge us, Congresswoman. And this is from one of our Pal Talk audience members. He is also a radio show host at Rainbows and Radio. And he asks, do you intend to get involved with Ed Markey's push for internet neutrality this term? We hope
yes.
you are, because corporate
yes.
involvement with control of radio, TV, and internet is frightening to all of us in independent radio.
I know, and luckily that's one that comes to Judiciary Committee. Where I serve, and I most
right.
certainly will be involved. This consolidation is dangerous, and we stand to be imposed on with major interests that have consolidated and reduced our ability to have competition in the airways, and also to give preference on the internet to certain big special interests and push everybody else to the end of the road in getting a time and space. So I definitely intend to be involved with it.
Well, wonderful. Let me ask you about one other very, very powerful issue that is facing the world today, Iran. Congresswoman, in light of what this president is doing, I don't believe that he has any intention of, and I believe that many of the comments and many of the things that are happening in our administration today are actually agitating the Iranian situation. How do you see that, and where do you see us, do you see us attacking Iran?
Well, here's what I think. I think when the neocons first fashioned this war with the president and thought that Iraq was going to be an easy pushover, and when the president rolled out on the battleship talking about mission accomplished, I do think that they had Iran and Syria in their sights. And they thought that they would move from Iraq to Iran and Syria to get basic control in the Middle East. I think the insurgents have disabused them of that notion, based on the awful devastation that they have caused and the resistance that they have put up to the occupation. And so Iran emerges in the mind of this president as a great threat, because they think that they have growing influence, and they think that they are certainly continuing to develop their nuclear capability. They claim they will not engage Iran until Iran agrees to discontinue its development of its nuclear capability. On the one hand, I hear that there are attempts in the background somewhere to try and develop some dialogue. But on the other hand, all of the public pronouncements are, we will not talk with them. We will not engage them.
Well, we're saying that, but Congressman Kucinich actually feels that we are agitating and aggravating the situation to the point of no return at this point.
Well, what I think is that it is impossible not to talk with Iran. That Iran not only have the capability of defending itself in the case of an attack, that they are developing nuclear, and that they are lighting up allies against us. And I think that the United States is not in good position with its allies, and they cannot convince them to join in supporting in a strike on Iran. So I think they have no choice but to try and have a diplomatic a political solution to their problems with Iran. And so even with all the bad talk and all of the machoism, the fact of the matter is, I think that we dare not.
And the big question of the day, Congresswoman Waters, what are the Democratic Party going to do with the first 100 hours, and what would you like to see them do?
Well, they are doing basically what they had set out to do, put together an agenda that you have been seeing that included, increasing the minimum wage, also expansion and support for stem cell research. Also, we'll be taking a look at the oil and energy interest in this country and talking about a tax on the big boys. We also will be talking about how we reduce the interest on student loans in order to expand opportunities for young people to go to college, and one or two other issues that have all been taken up and successfully being passed in the first 100 hours. We'll make our goal.
Well, good, because we're counting on you, Congresswoman. You have a great many fans, not only in our listening audience, but in our Pal Talk audience. I know for a fact that we are putting all of our eggs in the Democratic basket to end this war, to end this insanity, and to put us on a more benevolent track once again. That was what America was known for, and it is not happening anymore, and nobody likes it, and we're hoping that you will come back and visit us soon. Maybe we can have you back a little bit later in the year so that we can kind of touch base and see where we're going with this.
Well, thank you so very much, and I would love to come back, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you, and it has been an honor to have you here, Congresswoman. Thank you for
taking
the time out of your day.
Thank you.
Be well. That was Congresswoman Maxine Waters, folks, from California, and she was kind enough to give us this time. She's in a very busy time. This first 100 hours is really taking up a lot of time for them, and we're really glad that she was here. I hope everybody enjoyed her. We're going to be taking a break right now and putting out absolutely, everybody here is just loving Maxine Waters. I mean, we're getting all the thumbs up and everything, and I agree. I have asked her back, guys, and she promised that she would come back, so that's the way it is. And we apologize for not being able to take audience questions. It seems that it's a very busy time in Congress, and both of our representatives over the last couple of nights and couple of shows have really been gracious enough to give us that time but did not have time for audience questions. We are going to take a public service announcement right now, and when we come back, we will be interviewing our next guest, Len and Libby Trodman from San Francisco, California. So we'll be back in just a couple.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for being with us this evening on the People Speak Radio. And when the people speak, we make a difference. And this is a perfect example of that. Tonight we have with us Len and Libby Trodman of the San Francisco area. And they are involved and have been the instigators of an incredible group called the Jewish Palestine Living Room Dialogue Group. What an interesting name. Welcome, Len and Libby. And can you please tell us what the Jewish-Palestine Living Room Dialogue Group is and how you came about starting it?
Marhaba. Shalom.
Marhaba and shalom to you.
Millions of people are doing it on Pal Talk already. Meet new friends, see and be seen on webcams, and share files. With real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICQ buddies from one list, Pal Talk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. Pal Talk, communication beyond words.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who are forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Rudy?
Hello. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Len.
Let's see. Basamaz, just really good. We're just so pleased to be with you. And it is true that we're part, with our Palestinian partners, of a 14-year-old Palestinian Jewish living room dialogue here on the San Francisco Peninsula, preparing for now our 177th meeting.
Amazing, amazing. And for those of you that don't know the Palestinian part of this, as it turned out to be friends of mine, Adham and Nehada Salem, who are currently residing half of their year in Palestine, and they're also neighbors of Len and Libby. And this was just a lot of fun for me.
Well, they were so helpful when they were recently in Ramallah, because we just have the largest ever Osei Shalom Sana Asalam family, Palestinian Jewish family peacemakers camp here in the California mountains. And we brought 50 people, equally women and men, from 29 different towns in the Holy Land, including Jenin and Nablus and Ramallah and Bethlehem, Hebron, and they helped us transfer money over to those people so they would have their travel expenses to get here. They were so helpful from our
Wonderful, family. Wonderful. How exciting. So now this dialogue, from everything that I've been looking at, you're having meetings. Are these actually satellite groups that you're that are, like, say, in Louisville, Kentucky, and many other parts of California? Are these all satellite groups of the same group?
Essentially, many of them are, and there are many others that have been created from their own initiative. But we do have a large email circle of people, and we have a very large website that we try to put information on that helps people where they live start their own dialogue activity. So we do get a lot of requests for information, and we have packets and videos that we can send to people that describe what dialogue is and what it is not, which is very important, because the dialogue has to be something very specific to be successful.
Well, when you say specific, Libby, what do you mean by that? And I'm curious, because I myself, just for your information and to get to know where I come from on this, first of all, I am a Christian Palestinian born in the West Bank in the city of Ramallah. I also have been a peace activist for over 20 years in our local area, and I'm a poet. And much of my work involves, and we have a great, unbelievable Jewish community here that works with us hand in hand in all of our efforts to create dialogue, to create peace. When you say there are specific things, such as what?
Well, I think it's really important to give definition to the term dialogue because it is something that's used a lot in a lot of different settings, and it can mean anything from just sitting down and having a friendly conversation. But for our purposes, in the living room dialogue, when we bring Palestinians and Jews especially together, it's more about, it's not about conversation that's more shallow, and it's not about discussion which is more ping-ponging ideas back and forth, thinking more about what you want to say rather than listening to what the other person is saying. And for sure it's not about debating, because debating is proving your point and having a winner and a loser in most cases. So for us, dialogue is much more about compassionate listening, hearing what things mean to another person, hearing their life narratives, because we do not know each other. There's an absence of information about the two different groups of people especially. So it's about listening with compassion, and it's about speaking from the heart as well as the mind, and it's about speaking our truths. And it's not until we can really lay everything out on the table and know where each other is coming from that we can be much more practical and capable of solving any kind of differences.
Well, it sounds like an amazing dialogue. Let me ask you something. First of all, I know the two people that you are associating yourselves with. Now, if for the life of me, I cannot for one moment imagine Adham being serious enough, long enough to have any kind of a dialogue. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
We do. We know them really, really well.
He is a character, I'll tell you that. Now, but I do know Nahida, and I know that she is an extremely outspoken Arab woman and would not hold anything back. And from my understanding of and reading some of the information on your sites and everything, that there have been some heated discussions going on, and there was a lot of mistrust in the beginning. Can you tell me how you eventually got over that?
Do you want to answer, Leonard? Sorry.
Sure. I think Adham and Naida are perfect examples. You know them, and they are... Adham is a light on the outside, and he's one of the most courageous Palestinians we know. One example of what happens in the dialogue, an authentic dialogue, not just hummus. Well, hummus is an important part of it. It's so important that we created a book called Jewish Palestinian and Jewish Recipes for Peace.
What are the recipes for peace?
Just Google Jewish Palestinian recipes, and it'll come right up. So what happens is in the dialogue, we hear each other's stories, and we start to see one another as human and equal, and a big change happens, and that is we start to want the best for both peoples equally and not just for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we just heard you interview Maxine Waters, who is with government, and the truth is that there's very little she can do because people at the level of our Congress right now cannot be for both peoples equally, or they will lose their office, because the people in America are not for both peoples equally. So the whole beginning of political change is in the dialogue where people change their heart. And an example was in the Salem's home, where we were raising money for schools in Palestine and Israel equally. And they had Palestinians in their home and asked them for money, half of which would go to Jews. And that took unbelievable courage. And in one night, they raised $5,000 a month.
They are a dynamic couple. I know
they're
this.
They're fabulous. And then the Jews, of course, in their own way, raised another $5,000 for both
mm-hmm.
peoples equally. That's what happens when people not disengage but engage.
Well, let me ask you, these camps that you have been working with, is this something that you're going to expand upon?
Expand is not exactly the word we would probably use at this point. I would say it would be more about deepening, because we've had four now, and each year we've learned more, we've deepened more, we understand the process of change, and we understand the importance of telling our stories and having a lot of integrity with each other during this opportunity to really live together, for not going home at night, not falling back into the same patterns that we have, but really staying together, waking up together the next day, and and continuing on with the experience. So I'd say that this coming year in October, we do have a camp scheduled. It may be it'll be for a smaller group, a more select group that would be a leadership training skill so that the concept of the camp can now spread. It's wonderful for people to come and have this experience together here, but now the goal is to take these experiences and move them to other places so more people can participate. And that's been the same goal as the dialogue. You know, having one here for 15 years has been wonderful, but the important thing is to have the rippling effect and have many people participating in these kinds of experiences.
The truth is that the camp process in North America has grown, but the news has not reported it well. Where there was once one called Seas of Peace, which many people have heard about, now there are a dozen camps like that in North America for the Middle East public peace process. If one just Googles Palestinian Jewish camp, they will be very surprised and pleased.
And is there a networking between these organizations?
We're loosely related. We loosely communicate. But mm-hmm. as in most successful grassroots activity now, it's better not to be centralized and make everybody have the same personality, but to allow people to express themselves with their own gifts and their own inclinations and ways.
So let me ask you something, Len and Libby, and obviously the very essence of and the reason that we have a need for any kind of a dialogue or any kind of a group between the Palestinian and Israelis is because of the discontent, because of the war, because of the ongoing violence. Do you see that and I know that you're not necessarily a political group, but obviously if we don't get to the crux of the matter, this is evading the issues. How do you see the position of the United States administration in brokering some kind of a more harmonious dialogue between the two?
They can't. They can't because the people of America, almost no Jews and almost no Palestinians have ever met and have never had an in-depth, sustained relationship here or in the Holy Land. And until people can be for both peoples equally and not pro one or pro the other, our country and our government will default to the human default, which is wanting to take sides. And as you can see, it leading us nowhere. So the people have to change, and the people must engage one another face to face.
They must engage, but there's obviously an issue of justice here. There has to be some kind of justice for both sides, not just for one, but absolutely for both sides in order for there to be any kind of inclination or desire for dialogue. What would be the purpose as long as there's continuing conflict? And I am with you. My questions here are basically based on rhetorical questions that a lot of people would be saying and a lot of people are saying. And I'm just throwing them at you, and I'm hoping that you will satisfy these questions.
There's no doubt about it that in order to have peaceful relationships, there has to be justice. And when we're in the living room dialogue group, we hear that both sides have their call for what they feel is their greatest need. For the Jews, we know that it's a sense of security and a safe place to live where they are accepted and where they don't feel they have to flee again as they have for thousands of years.
Which is very understandable.
And for the Palestinians, absolutely. They feel that why should they be burdened with a problem that relates to the Jewish people, they have their own sense of needing a safe place, a state, and an identity. So what we believe is that both of these peoples can have their needs met. And right now what prevents them from having their needs met is that they have lots of stereotypes, lots of fears, lots of misunderstandings, and the more walls that are built, either physically or psychologically, the less they know about each other, and the more these stereotypings and projecting on each other, the evil, the enemy, the devil, all these bad terms that just build incredible fear and hatred, they cannot be dispelled. So we believe that to have the security, to meet the needs of the peoples, and to find justice, they do have to meet each other. So I would add that if a government really wants to help change the nature of the situation, they have to make it possible for the people to meet. And if it has to be in structured, controlled terms in the beginning, then do so, but at least let them come to the table, at least let them come and see each other and meet each other face to face. Because the people that we meet, and we know that there are many, many, many who say they want to have breakthroughs and they want to meet each other, they want to have business together, they want to save their environment together, they want to have schools together. So if the government wants to help, they can help them do all of these things that will really turn the nature of their relationships around.
Basima?
Yes.
You
yes.
are a writer. Like
yes,
you
I am.
And Naomi Shihab Nye and others.
I know a few of them, yes.
You know the power story. And when people open the newspaper today, it is the front page is full of the stories of human failures. And what one of the things that we have done from the camp and from the dialogues, we have two new films that are about to be released, two new documentaries. And if you Google Jewish-Palestinian videos, you'll see one is called Peacemakers, Palestinians and Jews Together at Camp. And it shows
And
the
is
picture,
this the actual camp that you
yes,
ran?
The Family Peacemakers Camp. And people can see what it will look like down the road when people live together and care about each other.
May I ask you why you called it the Family Peacemakers Camp as opposed to the using the Israeli-Palestinian connection to relay that? Was there a particular reason behind that?
Yeah, it is. It's Osei Shalom Sane Asalam, Palestinian-Jewish Family Peacemakers Camp.
I see. Okay.
We never
All
dance
right.
around that relationship.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you, how many people are involved in these groups?
I don't think we really know for sure, but we know that here in the Bay Area there are six dialogue groups, and we know that around the United States there are many dozens of others. We know that we've helped other dialogue groups in other states and on college campuses and in high schools get started. So
mm-hmm.
we think that there are, you know, thousands of people who are participating in some form of either Jewish-Palestinian dialogue or Christian-Muslim-Jewish dialogue. And we feel like dialogue in any of these settings, when I say dialogue again, it's with a very, very specific focus and purpose of compassionate listening and truth-telling, and it's not a hobby. It's to be sustained, and people have to come together regularly in a sustained fashion to take it very seriously for it to accomplish anything.
Libby and Len, let me ask you something. I know this is something that within our own communities here in the metropolitan Detroit area, within the Federation of Ramallah Palestine that I'm involved with, we always have, and I think this is kind of common for most organizations, do you have youth that are involved in this, and are they taking a serious role here?
We work more and more with youth and in the schools. One of the one of the films we just made is called A Dialogue at Washington High. And it's a 45-minute documentary of how a Jew and a Palestinian went into a classroom, modeled, telling their stories and listening, and then they have the students also learn how to relate to one another and communicate with a whole new quality of listening. We're involving the youth more and more, and we hope that this can revolutionize our whole method of education and relating on campuses by the model of Palestinians and Jews.
I'd just like to add and say that one of the things and one of the problems that's persisted on many college campuses especially is when the news in the Middle East gets tough, if there are groups on the campus of Arabs and Jews, they tend to really come out fighting, and they name call, and they have hostile banners, and sometimes they even get physical. And the unfortunate thing is, if they would sit down and really begin to talk and listen to each other and understand their conditioning and the root cause of why they feel the way they do and what the land means to them, something so different could come from this. And we've experienced it in person. And we've experienced seeing the shift take place where there is an openness and a willingness to begin to talk to each other in a different way. And we don't believe that dialogue is just intended as a solution to the Middle East. When we went into Washington High, the 60 students we worked with were totally diverse. And yet they all said that the day had huge meaning for them because in every situation, especially with young people, there's a lot of misunderstanding and misperceptions about each other. And we feel like dialogue is something that should be used in the schools, in all schools, with all the students.
Well, that's amazing.
I think
go ahead, Lynn.
Yes, I think I would like to make something really clear, and that is there have been peace camps and peace works and resistance movements, and a lot of people want peace, but they don't, and justice, but they don't want relationships, and it can't be. And you saw that in the peace camp just fell apart over there the minute there was violence, because they did not have a clue about each other. Palestinians had no clue about Jewish fear, and the Jews had not a clue of what life was like under a very unkind occupation. And that continues to today. And one of the tragedies is citizens' dependencies, it being spectators to government. And to think that a congressperson can change all this is really illusion. And it is very important that we understand.
Well, first of all, I agree with you because I don't think that our Congress or our Senate has really any deep-seated inclination or desire to change it. And without the desire to change anything, obviously that would be your stepping off point.
It must come from the people. And the people The people only change by knowing the other and beginning to want the best for the other and to no longer live by our dark stereotypes from staying apart.
We have a question from one of our audience members, a staunch Palestinian and a good friend of mine. And he says, why haven't you called it the Palestinians and Israelis, not Jews and Palestinians? Because I think this is something that a lot of people have concern over, is that it isn't Jews per se. It is the Zionist form of government that is really causing the burdensome occupation.
The separation is really between Jews and Palestinians. In America, we are not Israelis. We are mm-hmm. Jews and Palestinians. And even in the state of Israel, where there's huge alienation, total separation between the people, really, it is a conflict between Jews and Palestinians. And the Arabs and the Jews in the dialogue determined how they are identified.
Well, there you go, Zico. That question was for you, Zico. Let me ask you. I know that, and I'm asking this for my husband. As a young boy in Palestine, they made these incredible kites. And on your website, I see here 10,000 kites, talking kites in the Middle East, and San Francisco and beyond. Is this something that you were working with?
This was one project that was instigated by somebody actually in Israel had the idea of Palestinians and Israelis flying their kites on the opposite sides of the wall to communicate a message of hope for peace. It was just symbolic and a way to engage a lot of people.
And see, this is so disturbing because this is one of the things that I find the most disturbing. These incredible gestures, these incredible events that go on both sides, because we know that there are Jews that are definitely against the occupation and absolutely do not want to be engaged in this. And none of this is being projected. None of this is ever presented in the media. There are no big banners. And I don't understand why something like that, I think, would be so powerful. And I think that's what bothers me the most. Such a powerful image, 10,000 kites being flown by both Palestinians and Israelis over the wall. What greater image of unity could that project, and nobody wants to see it?
You know, people do want to see it, and it's just a very it's heartbreaking for us because we know through our communication and talking to a lot of people that there are wonderful efforts and projects going on at a grassroots level. And we do try to tell those good stories on our website. And if you would, again, Google the Jewish-Palestinian Dialogue and you look up stories, you'll see that there are more than 500 stories that we've sent out broadly in the last several years communicating these wonderful events and things that are going on to give people some sort of hope to hang on to so that they know that all the news is not bad. And we've always heard, if it bleeds, it leads, and bad news seems to sell papers. And I don't understand why, because if we need anything right now, it's good
news. We need some good news.
Yeah.
One of the questions from our audience. Oh, go ahead, Lynn.
If your listeners Google Jewish-Palestinian messages or Palestinian-Jewish progress, they will see stories that will show them that what is possible and not impossible at all.
Well, let me ask you, you know, we have a great, and this is a question from the audience, and I think it's a very powerful one. Have you ever involved any of the refugees that are in diaspora in any of these camps? Because we have, you know, we have refugee camps in Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, all over the world. And I'm wondering if perhaps that is something that we could engage in.
As I said, people came to the Family Peacemakers Camp, and they come to the dozen other camps in North America, from Jenin and Nablus and Ramallah.
So they do have camps that are addressing these issues as well.
They can come from wherever they apply, and they're all on the Internet. And they all
wonderful.
Have their Internet cafes, and you're on the Internet.
Well, yeah, may I suggest that maybe one day we can actually have some kind of a site that offers anybody this kind of information. That I think would be very powerful for people to know that they can go to the Internet and no matter what country they happen to be in, they can gather, because a lot of times people don't know about these incredible organizations.
It's true, and the more they know about it, the more hopeful they are, and what we really, really hope and try to encourage is for more Palestinians to participate, because in this country the Jewish story is more widely told and understood, and the Palestinians who are more newcomers to this whole process and to coming to the United States, it's more difficult to get them to participate and to understand that telling one story is so critical to launching the path towards changing relationships and the way people are treated and enabling them to really fight for the justice that they want. And by staying home and doing nothing and not sharing and not telling their story is not going to buy anything.
Well, I want to thank you. It's come to the time of the show that we have to say goodbye. I really, I can't tell you how appreciative I am of you coming here. Next time you speak to Neheda and Adham, please give them my best. And if I speak to them before then, I will definitely do the same. Hopefully they'll be coming soon. Thank you very much, Libby and Len Trodman. And if you will, I'm not going to attempt at saying the whole name of the organization, but I would allow Lenny to, if you would, please, Len.
It's a Jewish-Palestinian Living Room Dialogue, and thank you for telling stories that matter. And we say that people become the stories they hear and the stories they tell. So thank you so much for that, Sharon.
Well, you're most welcome. Thank you very much. And folks, that's it for tonight. Next week, our guest on the People Speak radio show is Lieutenant Ehren Watada. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm sure I'll find that out next week. He's the first officer to refuse service in Iraq, and he is set to be court-martialed. I have a feeling it's going to be a very powerful, powerful show, and, you know, let's see what happens with that. It's been a pleasure having all of you with us this evening. Thank you to our listening audience. Thank you, Don and Michelle in the background, Mike, Derry, and Lindsay. Thank you all, and again, to our audience, both virtual and cyber, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week on the PeopleSpeakRadio.org. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. one bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall by the relief on the past of summer people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.